Today on Wings. In 2013, Canada's Supreme Court struck down the country's laws on prostitution. Trading sex for money had been legal, but communicating about it and living off other people's sex work had been illegal. Sex worker advocates had argued that they needed to be able to run businesses and hire protection. In 2014, Parliament passed a replacement law. Selling sex was still legal, but buying sex became illegal. In 2023, a Superior Court judge ruled against arguments that the new law compromised sex worker safety. He said it balanced the most exploitative aspects of the sex trade with protecting sex workers from legal prosecution. Canada's 2014 law is loosely based on a 1999 law passed in Sweden. From 2005, here is Gunilla Ekberg explaining the so-called Nordic model.
When we work on prostitution, we have to ask ourselves, what kind of society do we want to live in? We can do like those who support the neoliberal agenda, who say that prostitution will always remain, and then put measures into place to reduce the harm. Or you can do as we have done in Sweden, where we actually believe that we can create a society where we abolish prostitution and trafficking for sexual exploitation.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The Canadian Association of Sexual Assault Centers met in April 2005 at the WASC Center for Dialogue in Vancouver. One topic of dialogue was Sweden's prostitution law, explained by Gunilla Ekberg, special advisor to the Swedish government's Division for Gender Equality.
I'm going to talk first about the principles behind the work that we do in Sweden to abolish prostitution. As you may know, we have worked very long to try and change policies and establish some kind of society where gender equality is at the center. We do believe that if we want to create a contemporary and democratic society where full gender equality is the norm, we have to ensure that women and girls are not victims of prostitution and trafficking in women. Because if we don't do that, we do create a separate class of females, economically and racially marginalized, who are excluded from our measures and who are only there to be available to men who want to buy them and sexually exploit them. It is officially acknowledged in Sweden that prostitution is a form of male sexual violence against women and children. When we passed our anti-violence laws, a law in that package of legislation specifically prohibits the purchase of sexual services to point out that prostitution is a form of male violence. One of the cornerstones of our policies and our legislation is the focus on the root cause. That is recognition that without men's demand for and use of women and girls for sexual exploitation, the global prostitution industry would not be able to flourish and expand. Prostitution is a serious problem. It's harmful, specifically to the individual prostituted woman, but also to society at large, to all of us. Because if one woman is prostituted, we are all objectified. In Sweden, prostituted women and children and young men are seen as victims of a form of male violence, and they have a right to assistance to exit prostitution. Pimps, traffickers, buyers knowingly exploit the vulnerability of victims in prostitution, like living in poverty, coming from a country where the state structures are not in place, as in victims of trafficking. Therefore, we must not only put into place measures to discourage the demand, but we must also make efforts to ameliorate the conditions that make women vulnerable. Poverty, we all talked about it today, poverty, gender inequalities, etc. In Sweden, we don't separate prostitution and trafficking in human beings, because we do know that 95% of all trafficking in human beings is for sexual exploitation. The traffickers intend to exploit the victims in the prostitution industry. All forms of legal, administrative, or policy measure that legalize, regulate, or administrate the prostitution industry is something we work to stop, to abolish. And I'm talking about the Swedish government because that's where I work, but of course also the women's movement. But within the European Union, there is a movement to legalize the prostitution industry and put women in windows. Go to Amsterdam and see the consequences of that policy. Legalizing or even normalizing prostitution activities means that the state imposes regulations which they can control one class of women as prostituted. Women who we know are already marginalized before they end up in prostitution. I have been charged, oddly enough, by the minister that I work for to export the Swedish model in Europe. So we just gave 500,000 euros to two women's organizations who are traveling around Europe to 12 countries organizing women against the legalization, normalization, and regulation of prostitution. I'm just going to talk about the law that prohibits the purchase of sexual services, but I want you to understand that the important features of what we do in Sweden is to prevent prostitution and trafficking, not just take care of the victims when they have already gone through the prostitution industry, but actually ensure that women and children are not becoming victims. The law that prohibits the purchase of sexual services was put into place on the 1st of January 1999 after 15 years of struggle from the Swedish women's movement. When I started in the Swedish movement, we started to talk about that we must visibilize those who are the root cause, those men who you have on the posters up there, those men who actually purchase and use women in prostitution. The law, as I said, was part of a package of laws focusing on violence against women. We have now put that legislation into our criminal code in the chapter on sexual crimes. And that's really important. Our trafficking legislation is in the chapter under sexual crimes. Our procuring legislation is under the chapter of sexual crimes. It is not public order legislation in Sweden, like it is in some countries. The law is very simple. It says, a person who obtains a casual sexual relation in exchange for payment shall be sentenced for the purchase of a sexual service to a fine or imprisonment for at the most 6 months. And we have just changed the legislation to also include situations where a group of men buy a woman for a stag party or a corporation that buys somebody for a visiting businessman to use. So now it's also criminal to buy for somebody else. Attempts are criminalized, so you don't have to show that you have actually bought somebody. You just have to show that somebody has attempted to do that. When you put legislation in place to criminalize the buyers, those are the root cause, you need to do three things. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You need to have a public debate where you talk about why you have this legislation in place, including questioning male sexuality and the right to express that sexuality whenever you want to, with whoever you want to, if you pay money. You have to educate the enforcers of legislation, the police, the prosecutors, and the judges. This takes time. We are starting to do that. In Sweden, we had, when the law came into place, 125,000 Swedish men had bought somebody for prostitution purposes once or more, 12.8% of the Swedish male population, or as it says on this poster, one man in eight had bought sex. We can see that after 6 years of having this legislation in place, that the number of women in prostitution has halved. The recrutation of young women into prostitution is minimal, except for in those cases where women are being sexually exploited by their fathers, brothers, uncles, and so forth, and they sell young women on to their friends. But the recrutation in street prostitution is almost over. There's less than 500 women. There's less than 500 women in prostitution in the streets in Sweden today, and we think there are about 1,500 in all, including victims of trafficking in Sweden in prostitution. We have 9 million inhabitants. If you compare with our neighboring countries, Norway has about 6,000, Denmark has about 8,000, and Finland have probably around 20,000 all in all. None of them have this legislation.
On Wings, you are listening to a representative of the Swedish government, Gunilla Ekberg, addressing the Canadian Association of Sexual Assault Centers in 2005. Since this talk was recorded, 7 more countries have adopted variants of the Nordic model. They include both Norway and Iceland, as well as Canada, Northern Ireland, France, the Republic of Ireland, and Israel.
So, who are the men who buy these women? Let's talk about the men, not just about the women. When I started to work in Sweden, I wanted to do a poster campaign about prostitution. These posters that you see on the wall here were all over Sweden in 2002. Bus shelters, subways, metro station, car parks. We just flooded Sweden everywhere. And we wanted to do differently. You know, the regular poster campaigns of information about prostitution is usually a woman in a short skirt, high heels, shirt with a décolletage. She's standing outside. She's leaning over a car. And what's in that car is invisible. So we dragged him out. Can you show the guy without a head, please? So this is the regular guy who buys women in prostitution, the most common male. He is married, he has a wedding band on him. He usually has children, and he's sexually active, and he's between 30 and 55. So all the myths of guys who are not having access to sex other ways, who are disabled, who are marginalized in one form or another, it's not the guy who actually is the John, the man who buys. We have done a study in Sweden, we have done studies in most of the European countries. It comes out exactly the same. And when I look at the statistics for men who have been arrested under our law that prohibits the purchase of sexual services, it is exactly those men who are the buyers, men from all income classes, all ethnical background, the most regular men you can think of. This poster was specific because we were working with the Baltic countries in a campaign trying to also stop Swedish male from playing sex tourists in the big capitals of the 3 Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. If you have been to Amsterdam, you should go to Vilnius, Riga, or Tallinn because it's even worse. So we know that the youngest man who had bought and who has been arrested under the legislation, he was 16, and the oldest was 76. Show the next, the one with the many guys again, please. I did this poster, and there was no actors in all of Sweden who wanted to pose for this poster, obviously. So because I work at the Division for Gender Equality, and they are a little afraid of me, I asked all the guys who are there to pose. Plus the state secretary and a political advisor, and so they're on this poster. It also says on the poster, it is a crime to buy sex. And then there says something about, you can contact us if you want to know more about this. Since the law came into place, 914 men have been arrested under the legislation. 2/3 have been convicted or pleaded guilty. We used the legislation quite successfully in procuring and trafficking cases. Usually when you have a trafficking or procuring case, all the evidence is in the hands of the women who are the victims. And the victims, of course, are traumatized and will not talk in open court about what they have experienced. So we drag the buyers into court in the same trial where they are being talked to by the judge, and they will corroborate in most cases the stories of the women, which means that we can convict the traffickers and the procurers based on the evidence that they give as well, which takes the burden off the women. It's very convenient. A lot of the selling of women these days go on the internet. We have had several cases where the pimps have acted only on the internet, and we got that one there. We had a case 2 years ago of an Estonian pimp who sold about 200 women over 4 years in Stockholm. He had a customer register of 25,000 men. Of those, 34 only were convicted. Now, why is that? Well, when the legislation came into place, the police, the prosecutors, and the judges were horrified. We don't want this legislation. How are we going to find the evidence? We don't think it's going to work. And we know, working with this, that the police is a homosocial, patriarchal organization with male values. And of course, in the beginning of this legislation, what did the police do? Well, they felt very sorry for the buyers who had been arrested. And they were very helpful for these men by not sending the notification of a crime committed to the man's address. And we had lots of police officers in high positions saying, we're not going to enforce this legislation. I had a very interesting conversation with the police chief of Stockholm the other month, because he came to me and he said, I'm going to be on the national TV news here because I'm retiring, and I'm going to tell them that I was wrong, that I have actually found that this legislation is excellent to stop the prostitution and the trafficking in human beings. And he did. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the effects of this law on the trafficking in human beings, because it's very useful, and I would like for you to take that with you. Traffickers, pimps for that matter, are businessmen. They want to make profit. Very simple. They have commodities. Those are women. And they want to sell those women in places where they can get the most profit out of the women that they bring there. I work a lot with the National Criminal Police. We have a national rapporteur on trafficking in human beings who is a woman who writes reports about the situation of trafficking in human beings every year in Sweden. She has concluded that we have about 400 to 600 victims of trafficking to Sweden every year, compared to Finland, who has 10,000 to 15,000. Holland, that has about 30,000, and Germany, where there are 400,000 women in prostitution, 90% are women from other countries. We have 400 to 600, as I said. And we know the reason why that is, because we have listened in, we have done phone taps on pimps and traffickers' conversation when they discuss where they're going to set up shop. And they have clearly said to each other, don't go to Sweden, because it is expensive, it's complicated, and you will not make as much profit as you would in other countries, such as Holland, Germany, Norway, Denmark, Spain. Why is that? Well, the law functions as a trade barrier, very simply. If you bring a woman to Sweden and you try to put her on a street corner, first of all, there won't be any buyers because they don't want to be picked up. And secondly, the social welfare authorities will pick up her to see if she's a victim of trafficking. That means that you have to create a register of clients. You have to find the men, because without the men, you have no one to sell these women to, and you will not make the money. And so if you try to do that, you can use the internet, or you have to have contacts. Most traffickers don't have those contacts. You need to have somebody who speaks Swedish. Otherwise, you will not be able to get the apartment where you need to sell the woman. You need to transport her or the buyer to the place where the buyer wants to buy her and sexually exploit her. All this costs money. You need contacts. So, it's obvious to us, if you target the root cause, the men who buy and sexually exploit the women, you will create difficulties for pimps and procurers to sell the women. And so less women will end up in prostitution. Our legislation is not the only one anymore in the world. We have lots of delegations to come and visit me, and I drag them around to show what's going on, and I tell them lots of things. South Korea, NGOs, women's organizations, police, prosecutor, government came to visit us 3 times last year, and they called me in September and said, "We did it now. Now we have the same legislation as you do." And the first week they picked up 5,000 men. And that, of course, upset the prostitution industry in Seoul, which is one of the largest in the world. So there's been big demonstrations and all kinds of harmful things going on in Korea, but they persist. And the Swedish legislation applies to our peacekeepers. It's the only country in the world where we have extraterritorial jurisdiction, which means that all laws that applies to Swedish citizens also applies to peacekeepers and military police when they are situated abroad. I've worked against prostitution for 15 years now, and I've spent many, many years trying to argue within all kinds of international organizations as the UN, EU, other regional organizations, and always almost be booed out of the room. This has now changed. Finally, the tide is turning. All this year, I've been to different international and regional organizations, and I have country after country standing up and applauding what we're doing. We even managed in the UN in March to pass a resolution that we should do measures to eliminate the demand. So I encourage you to start visibilizing the men who are the reason why women are in prostitution. Because if we can stop them from buying, we can stop women from ending up in prostitution in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you so much for a very interesting presentation, Gunilla. The first woman that put her hand up is Sherry Kingsley.
This has been a hard issue for the Coalition of Experiential Women, believe it or not. You think that it would be very simple for us experienced in various aspects of sex work to reach consensus on an issue, but it's pretty difficult. As I go to different conferences or as I work in the different communities across Canada, and as other women work within different communities across Canada, we're facing right now so much criticism from, you know, what some people term sex worker advocates groups, saying, you know, that we're diminishing women's rights, we're, you know, hurting the movement, that we've co-opted language of work that other women have done. And when we first were organizing to have our first ever national coalition meeting, we got a letter of protest that got emailed all over the place, including to the government. And we thought, no, we have a right here. You can't say that you're a human rights advocate and then silence and oppress us to share our experiences. And the other thing, too, that didn't sit well with me was that as a sex worker advocate, you weren't allowed to insert dialogue around addictions, dialogue around violence, dialogue around social conditions or around race or things like that, because those were kind of like personal issues, nothing to do with what was deemed legitimate sex work. So for a lot of us, forming a coalition was a very nerve-wracking experience to ensure that women that are still living in those conditions have access to this dialogue and then can slowly build links to other women's groups. We've built consensus on that women themselves within their conditions have freedom and decriminalization, but we haven't been able to make the position of the criminalization around the consumers and procurers, and that doesn't mean that we won't get there. It just means that there's a coalition of women from across Canada in various aspects of sex work. That's where we're at, but we see the link to groups that allow us that freedom to give that voice and that don't oppress us and that at the same time challenge our rape and our, you know, exploitation and our torture as being pretty crucial. So thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. Nathalie Sauvé.
I can't wait until Canada has the same legislation from my point of view. When I talk to general population, very often I hear from them that they say that prostitution is helping in decreasing the amount of incest and aggressions, meaning no prostitution, more incest and aggression. What kind of research or what kind of answer do you have from Sweden that I can take back to them as an example?
I get that all the time. First of all, you have to start talking about male sexuality as being unlimitable. You know, it's not like if men can't have it here, they must have it there. I'll just give you an example. When I was in Barcelona 2 years ago, and I debated somebody from Holland, a debate that I won, not very difficult. They don't have any arguments. But anyway, a man stood up in the hall and he said, "But Senora Ekberg, what can we do when we can't go to women in prostitution?" And so I thought and I said, "I think maybe the best thing is to take it in your own hands." That's my first answer. The second answer is that prostitution is central to the position of women in a society. Where we normalize prostitution as something absolutely acceptable for men to do, then every other sexual violent crime that men perpetrate will also increase.
Gunilla Ekberg, Special Advisor to Sweden's Division for Gender Equality, at the Canadian Association of Sexual Assault Centers Conference, April 27th, 2005.
I'm wondering, what has happened to all the women who were prostituting in Sweden before? How are they doing now financially? Where are they now? How are they now?
I forgot to say the third thing that was important when you pass this kind of legislation, and that is, of course, to create programs to assist women to exit prostitution. Otherwise, you will leave women in limbo. We've had prostitution groups in Sweden since the mid-70s that are assisting women, young men, whoever, to get out of prostitution. But we also started a few groups at the same time as the legislation came to place. And if I, for example, give you the example of the group that's in Stockholm, which is the capital of Sweden, the women who work to assist women to get out tells me that 60% of all women that they have met are now out of prostitution in a permanent matter. Because we know that women leave prostitution, that they go back and forth a couple of times before they manage to get out. So 60% of those women are out of prostitution and doing something else.
I thought you also increased your welfare rates.
Our welfare rates have, since the 30s, been quite good.
Yeah.
We don't have the same miserable, misery, what should I say, all the adjective but welfare rates that you have here in Canada.
When Canada passed its Protection of Communities and Exploited Persons Act in 2014, it allocated $20 million to assist those who wished to exit prostitution. About half went for grants to frontline organizations, and about half for law enforcement. The last of those grants expired in 2020. The Canadian Association of Social Workers recommended in 2019 that Canada prevent the need for survival sex work with supports for housing, childcare, and a universal basic income. Gunilla Ekberg's talk was shared by Suzanne Jay of Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter. Wings also thanks your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.